Bumper edition of the Wise Men Say It Tonight, as we have a review and a preview to do, just like old times. Chelsea and Man City, the two best teams in the country, well, in my opinion, they're the point of discussion, the neat. To help us to talk about those games, Damien Spellman from the Press Association. Glad to have you back on, Damien.
Welcome, nice to be here.
Chris Thompson is now the editor of A Love Supreme. How's that working out?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Except I do more work and the pay scale is the same, so it's fine, really. Just Martin does less work. And
Ideal game, like really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
looks a little bit better on your CV, though, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
We're in association with A Love Supreme, of course, straight into this night because we've got loads to get through. Gareth, I thought when I was watching the game it was similar to some of those Man City wins we've had in recent years. Now, you articulate those pretty well, so I'm going to let you take over.
Really?
Yeah, well, not take over, but answer the first question, though.
So what is the question?
Well, it's not really a question, just talk about the game. And do you agree, first of all? It was like those Man City games,
yeah,
the way we defended. Explain how we defended successfully, because I think you do that very well.
Oh, thanks very much. I feel self-conscious now. So it's just that it's not really blanket defence, is it? But it's just being solid and defending the 18-yard box and knowing when to press the ball at the right times. I thought against Chelsea, actually, we didn't press at all, really, but I don't think you can. Because if you start pressing the ball even in those tight areas, that's when you get the pockets of space for those little passes open up. And I didn't think they really pressed it at all. They just tracked the runners and sort of hoped that Chelsea would run out of ideas. And I mean, the thing about these sort of teams, and Chelsea especially, is that you can't allow any space in that gap between the defence and the midfield. Because if you get people like Willian and Oscar and Hazard drifting into that gap and picking the ball up in space, you're in serious trouble then. And that's why, you know, being so compressed in that area was important. And I thought first 20 minutes they didn't really get out as well as they'd like, probably. You know, did try and hold the ball, but I don't think anyone could get out of support because Chelsea were so exceptional in that first 20-25 minutes. And you couldn't risk that. You just had to defend for your life, try and take the sting out of the game, and then hopefully get back into it. And that's what Sunderland did. So it was pretty much, well, you could see afterwards how happy Poyet was. He was practically bouncing off the walls from a 0-0 draw, and they'd set up, and that's what they'd got, and he was absolutely over the moon. I think he was really proud as well.
First 20 minutes, Gareth's just mentioned there, Damien, I think that's important, because as positive as the result was, and as happy as we are with the performance, first 20 minutes Chelsea looked great, didn't it? And then it was important that we managed to just soak some of that pressure up for the first 20 minutes.
Absolutely, but I mean, just going on from what Gareth said, I thought what they did very well was didn't let Chelsea in behind them, which is where they're most dangerous. I think Ivanovic got in once and Pantelimon made a great save. But they just were so compact. And as you say, if the likes of Hazard and Oscar can get those little passes going and get him behind you, then they're dangerous. But they're not slinging balls into the box. So although Sunderland sat deep and invited pressure, they were never being bombarded. I just thought it was tactically very, very astute by Poyet and obviously carried out well by the players.
Chris, did you look at the team sheet at Chelsea and worry beforehand? How far into the game were you sort of looking at it thinking, right, actually I think we might be all right here? 20 minutes for me, as I've just said, I kind of sensed that was one of those Man City performances potentially on the cards.
Yeah, I mean, going into the game, I did anticipate us conceding an early goal, because that would be typical, and it's just typical Chelsea to kind of kill you off early in the game, you know what I mean, and build upon that as they did in the Champions League, which was a frighteningly good performance, I suppose you could describe it as.
Wasn't great preparation for our nerves, was it?
No, it's not. 5-0 in the Champions League, you know what I mean? But we stuck it out and we took the worst patches and we battled back and we got the 0-0. And it's, I was just saying before we went on air how this time last week you were talking about a 0-0, kind of shrugging your shoulders a little bit, but now it's like 0-0, this is fantastic, you know. The best 0-0 ever.
Yeah, very different 0-0s, weren't they? Okay, well, we can hear from Gus Poyet now on the Chelsea game.
Well, I think last week we had the feeling that it was nothing in the game, and if us, we had that belief to go and win it, in another day you should. Today was the opposite way around. It was a way of making it difficult to Chelsea and waiting for your chances, and we waited very well, because if Jono scored at the end or Josie scored at the end, I mean, we're still running around the pitch. But we need to be placed, we need to be realistic, and we need to know that we've done something special. You know, for the first time this season, Chelsea didn't score, which is incredible.
I think that we plan the game to play against a top team. Now, being in the other side, it's quite easy, no? I mean, you won't go and play for a draw if you are Chelsea away at Sunderland, but I can promise you the idea was to be solid, to make it difficult, to wait for your chances, to break, to take an opportunity, a mistake, a decision from the referee, and that would change the game one way or the other. But be in the game. That was the message today. Let's be in the game all the time. Let's not throw the game away because of one action. And I think in those times we were spot on. We can do the law, we can talk, we can watch videos, we can do tactical sessions, we can defend in training, we can, you know, whatever you want to do. But then we couldn't start to the 3 o'clock, okay? Today we're 5:30, but that's when you need to show people that you can do it. And that was a good example of how you have to defend against a top team as a team, you know, no individuals. A team defending for their life, and that's where we got the point.
Last time, Gus was sort of that enthusiastic about how well we'll defend him. It was just before the Southampton game. We'll see. Less said about that, the better. What we don't normally do on here is go through the whole team, I think, and talk about each player individually. But I feel like it would be harsh if we didn't do that, maybe, because everybody played so well. So I think we should do that. Does that sound all right to people?
Well, if we don't, then you know, there might not be a programme, so I think well, that's what you had in mind.
If you think of some of the no, because we don't always mention every player, we talk about different you know, incidents in the game and stuff, and maybe the odd player, but we've got a lot to talk about tonight. But just gauging off Twitter, people are like, can you talk about this player, make sure you mention this player, make sure you mention this player. So I just thought, yeah, should we talk about everybody? Should we start with the goalkeeper? Does anybody want to take that?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Go on.
I knew
I could rely on you.
Yeah, well, I've been quite critical of Pantelimon. I think just looking at him, he's a bit of a joke. You know, human beings aren't meant to be that tall for a start, you know what I mean? But, you know, he's came in, he's been brilliant. I can't really fault him. I'm not sure if he had that one covered when they hit the post. I haven't seen much of the day.
He got fingertips.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So he covered that, so you can't really fault his performance. I thought there was a bit of a dodgy moment when a cross came in, and he tipped it out for a corner, but I think he was just kind of playing it safe. There was no real threat, but I don't think you could see behind him. But apart from that, solid, and he has been.
Interesting, Damien. We're going to talk to David Mooney later from Man City. We got bad reviews of him, didn't we, Gareth? We were talking to Man City fans about him, and then he played in that League Cup game at home at Stoke, and I think both goals were possibly his fault. Definitely one, possibly two. And I was a little bit concerned, but he's looked, you know, he hasn't looked like that keeper at all. He's looked quite good since he's been in from the start, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. You couldn't fault him, really. I think the problem is as well, when you're a number two goalkeeper, although he's not come to be number two, you're just not getting any football at all. You're not playing reserve team football or anything. I think you could be quite rusty coming in, but and that affects confidence, I think. But he's come in, he's looked commanding. I mean, he is huge, as Chris says, he should command his box. He's looked a good shot stopper as well.
Every time he comes for that ball, you feel he's going to get it, don't
you? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and he should be 2 feet above everyone else, and he is, but he catches it and hangs on to it, most importantly.
And to be fair, there was a save he made where he got down really quick as well, and that was surprising and impressive, because I didn't think, you know, it was possible, but there you go.
I thought the back five generally looked solid, Gareth, and what I would ask is, I mentioned you off air earlier on. Is this the other side of the coin in not having the attacking fullbacks players? Because I'll keep saying, I think we're missing Billy Jones and Van Aanholt going forward. They're very dynamic as fullbacks, and it gives us something extra as an attacking force. However, going the other way defensively, you know, I would possibly suggest Virginie and Riviera are better defenders. So it's sort of which way you look at it, isn't it?
Probably, but maybe there's, you know, they've been in the side as a result of the injuries, and first few games of the season, or sort of midway into the season, we did have a few injuries at the back, and it was players were coming in and going out quite regularly. So maybe it's just getting that settled. Obviously, Mignone went out of the side, and then Pantelimon's come in. So maybe it's just getting that settled back line.
And
cutting out the silly mistakes.
Three of the back four played together under Poyet last season when we went on that run as well, anyway.
Yeah.
Which is relevant.
Of course it is. I mean, I think Poyet's talked before about how he likes to have the players like to have Virginie in the team, for whatever reason that might be. Maybe it's because there's nobody else, or maybe, and that's the best option that they've got, or maybe they like him in the team because they like him in the team, and you know, he justified that with an excellent performance. And Revier on the other side, who...
He deserves a special mention, doesn't
definitely.
He? Definitely. Because it was one of those, when he came in and we were saying, OK, his pedigree is very good. On paper, this should be a good signing, but then there's always that niggling doubt in the back of your mind, thinking, well, why hasn't anybody... why hasn't he been sorted out with the club? So
I think it's... transfers are complicated, aren't they? And there might be many reasons why he wasn't picked up by a certain type of club. I mean, is a Champions League level club or a top club aren't going to require a 35-year-old right back who is out of contract in November unless they are absolutely desperate, are they? I mean, that, I think that's the reality of the situation, that top clubs
which
can afford
nobody.
Yeah, but
was around.
Yeah, top clubs can afford to strengthen the ranks and the windows to the level where they're covered. Sunderland tend not to, so that there's reasons why he might not have been picked up by clubs more of his standard or more clubs that would appeal to him. Maybe Sunderland are the only club that offered him the deal that he wanted, or maybe he fancied playing in England because he's never played in England before, stuff like that. And he was talking today about how he's enjoyed it and how he's, you know, it's always nice to hear someone, they've come over, moved to the area, they're enjoying it. And I know footballers get, you know, pelters for being, you know, money grabbers and, you know, after their own career, like, look after themselves to the extent where they'll do one over on anyone. But, I mean, Revier's 35. He's probably just enjoying the twilight of his career, and he was saying he'd be open to a contract extension. And if he continues on the way he has been, then I see no reason why, when we've, over the years, where we've had so many problems in those positions, I mean, age is just a number, isn't it? And if he plays...
He's certainly
well
someone you'd like around your squad just
exactly.
to put in, isn't
I mean, we saw, I mean, going back, I mean, look at Zenden and Mal Brank, and I know Mal Brank wasn't an older player, but he was an experienced player, and he went, and Zenden, who was very important in the squad, went, and we struggled as a result of them leaving. You know, maybe he could have that sort of influence around the dressing room and around the club.
Okay, Damien, you cover Ireland, so you see John O'Shea play even more than I do.
Mm.
He's starting to play like the player I thought we signed now. I've been quite critical of John. I think we know his limitations, slow on the turn, but he seems to have found a way to sort of get the best out of his ability at the minute, and I think this is far and away the best he's ever played for us.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is about John O'Shea, he's a defender. He likes defending, and, you know, I think Gus said on Saturday, you know, not many people like to defend, but John does, and he played alongside Richard Dunn for years, who was probably in the same mould, you know, not the most mobile, but just loves defending, loves getting his body in the way. I think what John O'Shea does, you know, is something that a lot of very different type of player Rio Ferdinand did. His positional sense was so good that he didn't have to use his pace. Now, Rio Ferdinand had pace, and John perhaps hasn't particularly, but I think when he's confident and he knows, you know, where to position himself on the pitch to protect against any burst of speed. I think where you would be worried was if you get a nippy little lad in down the sides of himself and Wes Brown, because they're not going to turn and sprint after somebody. That's when he gets caught out. But I think positionally, I think he's been very, very sharp in the last few months. And, you know, I mean, you know, the whole Ireland thing as well helps. He wins his 100th cap, he scores a late equaliser in Germany. That's got to give you confidence. And even at the age of 33, 34, you need confidence. Look at your man Van Persie, who's, he was a brilliant player, but has had a dodgy couple of weeks. Just confidence is a massive, massive thing, even for experienced players.
Certainly is. Moving on to the midfield, Chris. And Lee Cattermole was playing out of his skin anyway. But I think Liam Bridcut's performance against Everton, which was superb to be fair, has that just nudged him a little further, because he sort of upped it even more, didn't he?
I don't think his position in the squad was ever really in threat.
It wasn't, no, but that having that healthy competition can only help.
Oh, definitely, but I mean, you know, as I was saying, we'll keep going back to things we say off air. I think we say the best things off air, to be honest, but I was just saying, like, I came out of the match and I didn't think Lee Cattermole had a particularly better game than he usually does. That was a very typical Lee Cattermole performance, and if it just so
it's
happens
possibly the standard of opposition is greater, so
it's just the fact that we're on Sky.
But he's doing against better
players.
I suppose
you could show him off a bit better against better players, because it's just like a higher test, and he's rose to the occasion, and now he's getting national plaudits, which is great, as long as nobody buys him in January.
Yeah, there's always that, isn't there?
The key battle in the game for a long period was Matic versus Cattermole, wasn't it? That was the he was their, you know, starting point, really. And you know, Cattermole was the stopper for us, and he won. Cattermole won the battle, yep. And Matic is a fantastic player. So, and then, you know, for him to, I know he'd won the award, but to pick that up last night and, you know, out on the back of that performance, just, it's appropriate. I mean, we've talked about Cattermole loads of times on here, and he has his detractors, and, you know, that everyone's, you know, like some people might say that, you know, you like Lee Cattermole because he's like a Kevin Ball type player, or he's like this type of player who likes to tackle and all that and get stuck in, and that's the kind of player Sunderland supporters enjoy. But I disagree. I think I enjoy watching Lee Cattermole for many reasons, and it's not just his determination, his desire. I mean, that is a great element, is that his desire, because he wants the desire to play for Sunderland in him is as strong as anyone you'll ever see. And on top of that, he has got quality. He has a technically good player. He can pass the ball. Saw at times when he was running the ball out of tight spaces at the weekend, which he doesn't do nearly enough because of the position he's in. But he carries the ball pretty well when he gets going. He can glide past people no problem when he's got a bit of space. And he was doing that. So, yeah, it was like you say, he is generally very good, but maybe that he's getting a bit of plaudits in the national media now, and everyone's maybe realising he is actually quite a good player. And carry on.
I suppose it's more of an accomplishment to keep Chelsea out than keep Burnley out, isn't it, really?
And I also think as well that a lot of people tend to focus on Cattermole's flaws as a footballer rather than the positive elements he brings to his side, and I think it's because of the kind of player he is. If you look at somebody like a Ben Arfa type of player, you know, who has got lots of negative elements to his game, but because he's a flair player, people get excited by him, so they want to see him in the team, and they think, you know, he's the person to build a team around. Same with, like, Sessegnon, maybe, you know, when he was at Sunderland. But you know, Cattermole's flaws are always talked about ahead of his qualities, because he's not a flair player, maybe, I don't know.
But people talk about deficiencies in the Sunderland squad, Damien, and, you know, Gus has said himself, you know, with the squad has limitations, that's why we're playing in a certain way at the moment, you know, make yourself hard to beat first. However, there is one position that we have covered, isn't it? Because I've just mentioned Bridcut's performance against Everton there, that can't be ignored. That's one position, that defensive midfield role. And, I mean, Rodwell, you could even argue, could play there. So at least we have one position well and truly covered anyway.
No, I would agree. I mean, when Bridcut came in and made his debut in the derby, it was magnificent. And then he had a bit of a dip, didn't he? But certainly the last game he played very well. And I think you're right, that positive competition can only help. When you've got two players very capable of playing in there, battling it out for position, and that must increase standards, definitely.
Did you vote for Lee?
Funnily enough, I didn't, actually. Ooh. And do you know what?
Shall we start booing?
He was in my three. He was in my three. I think, just got to say, I think the most impressive thing about him at the weekend and in recent weeks is the discipline. And I don't just mean the yellow cards and what have you. He's learnt when to stay on his feet and when not to dive in. He's learned not to let that red mist descend if he does pick up a booking and then go and get another daft one in 5 minutes later. And I think that's a sign of real maturity, and that's only going to make him a better player.
Martin O'Neill used to call them lunges, didn't he? He used to always say he needs to stop these lunges, and Gus Poyet's done something's clicked, doesn't he? I mean, I don't want to talk about Cattermole too much, because we do this every week. We're supposed to be going around all the players one by one, but something's going to happen.
What I do like about him is he will put a heavy challenge in from time to time when it's needed on certain players, and you have to have that.
Yeah, it's decision making, isn't it? Yeah. It's knowing when to do it.
I mean, like Vard, like when we were down at Leicester, Vardy was just niggling and kicking at him all game, and he put in a potentially red card challenge on Cattermole, 2 feet sliding out of control, clattered him, and about 10 minutes later, Cattermole, the ball was there to be won, and he took everything and. Mm. You know, and then there was all the fury about it because it's Lee Cattermole. It's like, well, Vardy's done it 5 minutes earlier, and I think that's a problem. That's going to follow him round.
Yeah, it will. It will. You're right.
That's a bit. It's slightly unfair, but because other players do it too. But you know, he's just awesome, isn't he? We love him so well.
That's as good a summary as you're going to hear, I think, isn't it? Yeah. Seb Larson as well, Chris. A bit like John O'Shea, what I was saying to Damien before. I've been a critic of Larson, but I think, again, and praise a manager for this, he's found a role in the side that he can really concentrate on, and he's benefited from that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the the kind of football hipster term for his role is. I just call the Jack Russell,
really.
He's kind
of the link between Catamol and the forward players, isn't he? He does all the work off the ball the same as Catamol does, doesn't he?
He can kind of do everything that's expected from a midfielder to a reasonable standard. You know, he doesn't particularly excel in any area. I'm not saying he's an average player. I think he's a good player, you know what I mean? But he's just a kind of all-round midfielder. And the fact that he's been raised as a winger, and then he's just moved inside. Yeah. It's remarkable, really.
And in his defence, when he was being criticised by myself and others, as you say, he was a right winger. He was suddenly dropped into the middle of the park, and that was when we were playing very static and regimented 4-4-2 formations. And he looked as bemused as the rest of us did at what he was doing there. And I think the fact that Gus employs three of them in there has made a big difference.
Yep. I mean, I know you'll be moving on to Rodwell, but it was just interesting to see how those three actually operated. And I've got no complaints. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Rodwell, but I'll wait until you go.
No,
on
we'll
here,
go.
But,
that's I think it. That's a perfect link there, Chris. Take it away.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not a fan of Jack Rodwell at all. Like, I think since he's came in, he's been average at best, and I'm just really aggrieved that I wouldn't say we wasted 10 million. But
we've spent our budget on him.
We've spent our budget on a player that we didn't need. However, against Chelsea, he was decent. I won't say he was good, but I'll say he was decent. But he didn't need to be good because the players around him were excellent. And, you know, if you're going to keep him to bring him in against the better teams to have a better defensive mind around, then fair enough. But I don't think he's going to bring any goals to the side or create chances.
I think
still patient with Jack.
You just got to give it. I think in 6 months' time, I think you've got to remember he's not alone, yeah. Is he? It's a 5-year deal, and you'd hope.
I'm just not a patient person. That's all.
So one of these,
you know, when you spend £10 will be fine. When you spend 10 million on a player and you need a creative midfield player.
What he's going to do is he's going to do a Wickham, isn't he? He's going to be shopping for four years, and then his final year, when he's got the contract power, he's going to have a good season.
Yeah.
Isn't he? That's just the way it happens here, isn't it? Yeah. What do you think? Are you still patient with him? No, I mean, you just said that, Gareth, but his performance Saturday?
That was decent, yeah. Just, you know, difficult game to play in, someone coming back. Because of the concentration levels required, but yeah, he did fine. And then Gomez, when he came on, did okay as well. Sort of slowed the game down a bit at times, which I'm not a big fan of.
Well, I was gonna say, I wonder what people think about the substitutions as well, Damien. I know that Gareth's not a fan of Gomez, and I noticed when I was reading Chris Young's match ratings, he only got a 6, and I thought him as well as Altidore, who will come on now. I thought Gomez really helped us control the game and turned our performance from sort of just coping defensively to actually looking the more threatening going forward. I thought he was a big part of that.
I think the game opened up at that point, didn't it? I'm not saying necessarily because of the substitutions. I think because Chelsea were going for it hammer and tongs, some of them were exploiting the space in behind. I think Gomez did play a part in that. But I have to say, I think Altidore made a big difference, actually.
Is there hope for him yet? Because that's the best. I've certainly since the first when De Canio first came in and he looked all right. I think it's the best he's played since those sort of games.
Yeah, second derby.
Yeah, he played well in the derby too.
Well, he's outstanding in that one at St James.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
well.
It's the best he's played since. Then, I agree.
Well, I mean, I saw him play for America against Ireland a couple of weeks back, and he played really well, much the same way as he played on Saturday. You know, he pulled wide, he ran at people, he looked powerful and confident. I think the thing is, he's a big fish in the American team, and he's obviously not here for obvious reasons. It's not quite worked for him, but there is something there. Whether he's ever going to score the goals he should score, I don't know. But he's a big, strong, powerful lad, and when he runs at people, it's difficult to defend against.
He sometimes looks a bit ungainly, but you know he was much better. He was much better, and what I was thinking, you know, as I'll hear from Gus later, there is some doubts. He didn't say who, but you'd have to assume Fletcher would be one of them, but maybe he picked up a little knock because he went off after.
Would it be fair to say Fletcher was possibly the only person who was maybe a 6 out of 10 in the team?
Well, he did alright, but it's difficult when you're playing up front.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
But
Altidore made more of an impact.
He did, and that what is good about that is if that is the case, that Fletcher maybe is out on Wednesday, you can look at Altidore and go, well, I'm not, Wickham had a good game. And he knows that he can keep that shape, and maybe he'll think, right, Altidore looks confident, and I can give him a chance to build on that 25 minutes and put him in from the start, knowing that he looks confident, he's going to do a job, and he can feel positive about the contribution that he's made. And that's a positive thing as well if Fletcher is out, because as I say, he did mention about Knox, and I don't know, maybe that might be one of them.
Couple of minutes on Adam Johnson, Connor Wickham. Any takers? Everybody's looking about. Well, I was hoping somebody would have such an overwhelming opinion on one of them, two of them.
Johnson was really good in the second half, particularly when he started picking up spaces. And he was unlucky with that effort, which was so close that match that they deemed it never to exist, along with Out the Doors.
You get used to that, though, don't you?
I know, but that was ridiculous. It's one of two of the best efforts in the game. I was like, no, they didn't. We'll move on from that. So Johnson, the best he's been in a while, I would say. So.
Is the argument, Damien, that Johnson picks which games to put those performances in? Or is that harsh?
I think it is. I don't think any player consciously would do that.
Not consciously, perhaps, no. But...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, is he better suited against some teams? You know, I mean, certainly in that second half, as I said, the last 20, the game did open up, which suits him when, you know, he can get the ball to feet and get defenders turned. I don't know, he's a bit of an enigma, isn't he? I mean, there's no doubt the kid's got talent. Again, as a teenager at Middlesbrough, I think Middlesbrough rated him more highly than Stuart Downing at the time when the two of them were coming through. They thought he would go on to have the better career. And there's obviously talent there, there's ability there, but sometimes it just doesn't quite click for him, does it?
And Connor Wickham finally, Chris?
I thought he was better. He was certainly more useful.
I thought he played well.
Yeah. I mean, in the latter stages, he had probably his hour better chances at goal
He's another one, sometimes you just wonder how interested he is, and he's another one, whether it was the occasion and a big game live on Sky.
He was better against Leicester. I'm not his biggest fan, but he has done better in recent weeks. A bit more... Bit more
drive,
yeah, and you know, not weak.
Mm. I just thought it's no secret that he would rather play through the middle, and he's probably most effective as a central striker. But I thought for the first time he embraced that position, and not many people make Ivanovic look that nervous. And I thought he played really well on Saturday, cut inside a couple of times, hit a couple of good balls. I thought it was one of his better games for Sunderland.
He just needs it again. It's decision making. I mean, it was less obvious, but he just, you know, some of the runs he makes.
He had less time to make the wrong decisions, though, didn't he? Against a good defence like Chelsea.
Some of the runs he makes is forward aren't like intelligent centre forward runs, even from a wide position, like some of the stuff he does. He always wants to go in towards goal, and sometimes when you've got one up front, you don't want someone running from a wide position towards the goal because you're closing off your opportunity. So all you get is the opportunity. You can only cut inside and shoot, so things like that. So he needs to go to the line and look for somebody coming in rather than trying to score, cutting inside and shooting from 35 yards, which is, you know, I mean, just a bit ridiculous sometimes. But he was generally a lot better, and he should be credited for that.
Thumbs up for each of the players then. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be talking to David Mooney from the Blue Moon podcast about Man City. We're joined by David Mooney now from the Blue Moon podcast. Nice to have you on, David, again.
Good to speak to you.
First of all, before we get into the game, David, I can't remember if it was yourself or a colleague of yours, perhaps, who was telling us in the summer that Costel Pantilimon wouldn't be a great signing. Was it you?
I'm not sure if it was me or not. I have my reservations about him, but I didn't think he was a terrible goalkeeper.
Right, okay. I think it must have been a colleague of yours, because we were getting the information that he was a terrible goalkeeper. And to be fair, apart from his first League Cup game, he's looked anything but that.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair to him, he didn't really have much of a chance at City in behind Joe Hart. But for the games that he came in last season, he did all right. He didn't look brilliant in the air, and looked a bit ropey getting down. You know, when a shot was close to him but low down, he looked pretty cumbersome getting down. But I suppose, you know, for someone who's what, 6'8" or whatever, you can kind of understand that. Overall, I'd say he was probably a comfortable Premier League goalkeeper. I don't think he was really a huge challenger for Joe Hart for the shirt. So I think that's pretty much why City were looking to get rid over the summer. In terms of whether he could be a number one at a Premier League club, we'd said on the podcast between us a few times that we felt that kind of elsewhere in the Premier League, for a team that probably wasn't challenging for the title, he'd be all right. But, you know, I'm kind of pleased to see him getting some games, because he's kind of a little bit of a cult hero at City.
Well, we certainly won't be challenging for the title anytime soon, so I think he's found the right thing. How do you feel as a Man City fan about the Sunderland game? Because we beat you 4 years in a row, Peter, 1-0. Do you think that has any bearing whatsoever?
Yes and no. I mean, no, it shouldn't have any bearing whatsoever, but I think psychologically a lot of the players that are going there will be going thinking, oh, it's there again. We'd lost there last year with this happened, and the year before this happened. And it always seems to be a game where City dominate possession but just cannot find a way to break you down. And then you either hit us on the break, or we make a sloppy error and give away a penalty or something daft like that. And it's either in the very last seconds of the game where you win it, or you score really early on and we give you something to hang on to and then never be able to get through, and you just kind of like comfortably see it out. So I think psychologically there must be something in the heads of the players now that will make sure that Wednesday night they're not going to be looking forward to it.
And of course, you just mentioned there the way we defended. Did you watch the game against Chelsea? Obviously, that they're going to be your main rivals this season. So, did you watch that game?
I did, and I think City will be damn fools if they don't learn from it, because you've pretty much showed us what you're going to do against us. And
it's going to be a carbon copy, you would have thought, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and you know, if City fall for it again this year, then it's, you know, we've only got ourselves to blame, really. If you can pull off a 0-0 or another 1-0 win, then you know it's credit to you, because, you know, year after year, you've defended well there, and you know we've. It's as if we've turned up and thought, well, we're going to roll it, we're going to roll them over, and then you've kind of gone, well, no, you have to come and earn the points, and we've just not done that.
Will you freshen the side up, do you think? Because you played Champions League, and then you play a very, very impressive result at Southampton on Sunday. But you know, you have a big squad. You would have thought the manager would want to use them all. At the same time, you don't want to break momentum up.
But I think the biggest problem that we'll have is currently Edin Dzeko's injured, so it kind of limits the striking options, because Jovetic has been playing a little bit deeper, dropping in into the midfield, and half the defence is either injured or suspended, so it's going to be a bit patched up for Wednesday. And I'm really worried about the centre half pairing. We'll have Di Michaelis, who really has come on since his time, you know, at the start of last season when he looks a bit ropey. Mangala's suspended. Kompany looks as if he's going to be injured. And that kind of leaves us with Nastasic, who has been, you know, nowhere near the first team this year for reasons that, you know, a lot of us fans can't seem to fathom. And then Dedryck Boyata, who, as far as I can tell, only got a new contract in the summer because he fills the one spot in the Champions League squad where you have to have somebody come through your own academy. He's certainly not of the standard that you would expect of a Premier League player. So the very fact that he could be suddenly thrown in to start against a team where we struggle year on year, it really does worry me.
Okay, well, we'll quickly hear from Gus Poyet now on the potential changes in the Sunderland team.
I couldn't make the last change because we had a couple of players with a couple of little problems. I'm not going to give too much information away, but that could be an option, you know, to give a rest. They are tough games, you know. So probably, you know, we need to be careful and make sure that we put a fit team out in there and go and play the best we can.
Okay, just to further elaborate on what we were talking about before David came on there, Gareth, Jose Altidore unsettled the Chelsea back four when he came on. Now, it seems remarkable that just a week after we were all sort of dismissing his future at Sunderland altogether, that we're now possibly suggesting he starts this game, because, as David said, Man City are going to have to potentially a new partnership at the back there.
Yeah, and I would say, I know what David's saying about, you know, the blueprint for the game, and I think for that type of game, ordinarily, the blueprint is what we did against Chelsea and what we've done to Man City before. The issue you've got is, can the players maintain that level of intensity and concentration in that system 3 days
it's
later?
It's going to be tough physically and psychologically. So,
and with Liverpool coming on Saturday, I know Liverpool.
Nah, they have rubbish, man. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
I know Liverpool have been out of form, but at the same time, you know, you've got that issue. So it'll be interesting to see maybe if he plays a little bit more open, or is he going to do the same thing? Altidore might give you stretch it a bit more. I mean, I know you've got to have the ball to try and stretch your team, because he's got to get turn and get running in behind those centre
backs. And for the first 20 minutes, we aren't going to have the ball, are we?
Probably not, but you don't know. I think you know, Chelsea this season are slightly better than Manchester City this season, although last season Man City were equally better than Chelsea, so it's a different beast, you know, that they're still a class team. So it'll be interesting to see if he does try and do the same thing, how he'll change the team to accommodate.
Do you think
that
he will change the team, David? Because you've just said there that they will be fools not to learn from the Chelsea game, not to learn from the previous games against Manchester City. So you would have thought an obvious tactic would be to come here and say, okay, let Sunderland have the ball, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing with City is this season is we've struggled to once we've had control of the game, if we haven't taken any chances in that period, and then control of the game has been lost to the other team, we've really struggled in getting back into it. The exception for that would be Southampton at the weekend, where we completely battered them for the first 10-15 minutes. They found a little bit more possession. They got back into it again. Then the second half, we came out and we just steamrolled them. I think in terms of how Pellegrini will set up, the actual problem City have had with the midfield this year has kind of, it's transcended all of his systems. He's been quite heavily criticised for sticking with his 4-4-2 formation. And just kind of saying, we don't care whether the opposition are going to try and dominate possession or whether they're going to sit back and let us have it. We play 4-4-2, that's our thing. And we've been overrunning the midfield all the time. And then we went to QPR, where a team where you knew they were going to press us real and put us under pressure. And he knew that as well. He changed it to a 4-5-1. And still they couldn't seem to get the ball in the midfield. So I think it'd be a game where I'd like to see Frank Lampard start, and just somebody who is quite, you know, someone who's intelligent on the ball and able to deal with that pressure. Because Yaya Toure's just been completely out of form this season. He's starting to find his feet a bit. The same for Fernandinho. Fernandinho looked like he was still shell-shocked from when Germany put seven past Brazil in the World Cup. So I think it's starting to kind of come together. Whether our traditional bogey team in, you know, going away at Sunderland, whether that's come a few weeks too soon for us getting his confidence back, I don't know. I would like to see Pellegrini change it a little bit from weekend in terms of the midfield. I'd like to see maybe Fernando in there as well, just to got a bit of bite in the midfield, because you've got Catamol, who has been, you know, from the games that I've seen this season, has been just a phenomenal turnaround in what I expected from him. I just expected him to go out there and kick things, and he's just not been like that at all.
Damien, I'm not hoping the Frank Lampard players, I'll be honest. Dave's just mentioned there that Pellegrini gets a lot of criticism for playing 4-4-2, rigid setup, regardless of what the opposition is going to do. I will be one from a neutral football fan who would look and criticise him for that personally. And with somebody like Frank Lampard in your team, you go three in midfield, a goal threat like that, I really don't want to see that him line up like that. I do hope they stick with the 4-4-2.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of a bit of the school that if it works for you, do it. You know, don't worry about the opposition, but you have to be a very good team to be able to do that. And Man City are a very good team.
Oh, that's undoubtedly why they do it. Yeah,
absolutely. But I take your point about Lampard. I mean, amidst all the Gerrard Lampard debate over the years for England, I would have always gone for Steven Gerrard above Frank Lampard. But I think in the last 2 years, Lampard has just maintained, you know, what he's done for 15 years, and Gerrard's sort of gone back, and I think he's as dangerous now as he's ever been.
I mean, the issue is we're talking about defending round, you know, the 18-yard area and 25 yards from goal and stuff, and Chelsea couldn't break us down. Historically, Man City haven't been able to break us down. Frank Lampard would, you know, he gets a ball 20 yards out, it's almost like a half chance.
It is, absolutely. And I think the other thing as well, I mean, people talk about Diego Costa, who has been brilliant this season, and I thought Sunderland marked him very well. I think Sergio Aguero is a different kettle of fish. I think he's the best striker in the world at the moment.
This is the best he's playing. Yeah, this is the best he's playing for you, David, because, I mean, he's always been a terrific player, and I don't know if it was just because it was more attention on Luis Suarez last season, but Aguero seems to have kicked on even further this year.
I think Aguero's biggest thing this year, touching every single piece of wood possible, is he stayed fit. Ever since he's joined City, he's been in the games where he's been fully fit, he's averaging better than a goal a game. And it's a phenomenal strike record for somebody who, generally misses half the season injured because he's like his legs are made of glass. They fall apart at any given opportunity. He's had at the moment one of the longest runs he's had in City's team. And, you know, he's really benefiting from it. In the whole month of November, the very fact that we are still in with contention of getting out of the Champions League group, that we've been doing our best to completely mess up, and that we're still within touching distance of Chelsea, is largely down to him and him alone, really. The rest of the team has been kind of hit and miss. He's been a constant in, you know, getting the ball on the edge of the box. Don't give him any support whatsoever, and somehow he still finds a way to put it in the net once or twice. So I'd agree. I think he is certainly one of the best, if not the best, in the world right now. And I think the attention he's getting is partly because he's been able to get a bit of a run in, so his goal-scoring record looks even more impressive than it has done in previous years.
Okay, Chris Thompson, have the previous results against Man City and the performance against Chelsea almost lured us into a false sense of security about this game, where we're feeling quietly confident about it now almost, and in theory we should have no chance?
I certainly hope not. These things come to an end, you know. People don't stay bogey teams forever. We've had a few bogey teams over the years who have since not become bogey teams, and I hope this isn't the time that we stop becoming Man City's bogey team. But I don't know, it's all going to come down to the night. I mean, the fact we played Chelsea at the weekend, it's good and bad, because it's a good preparation for Man City, but then, you know, it's hard playing three tough games in a week, and this will be the second of those games. And
interesting to see if people like Quatez come in, because you've got two ageing centre halves perhaps. Quatez can't play Liverpool the weekend, can he?
No, he can't. But so still, I wouldn't fancy him.
No, I wouldn't either. But it's a question to be asked, down the tunnel
after the game. Quatez walked past. Dear me, he's a man mountain. I've never seen a bloke as big as him in my life.
What about Pantelimon?
Yeah, he's big.
No, but he's wide.
He's taller.
He's as wide as he's tall. I can't. Okay. He's massive. And you won't, like, you think if you were a centre forward playing against him, you wonder why he hasn't got on, because he should be bullying people.
I'd be interested to see if he starts a game. Right, we'll get a quick prediction from everybody before we move on. David, you give us yours first. Be as honest as you like.
What I would like to see happen, and what I think is, if City are going to win, then I think it's most likely that City will win by the odd goal. I think it'll be probably 1-0. But, you know, I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if you did as 1-0 again yourselves, because it just seems to be the way it is. I mean, even, you know, a few years ago, Mancini commented, oh, we're not coming back here next season because it's the same old story. So I, you know, honestly, my head says that surely City will end that hoodoo this year, and it'll be a comfortable, you know, 1-2, 3-0 win. But, you know, in the back of my mind, it's always there. Sunderland 1-0. So I'll say 1-0, but, you know, not commit to which side.
Gareth?
I'm going to say just Man City, because I think we'll have to play slightly more open, because I don't feel as though they can approach the game the same way this time, because it's not in isolation. It's sandwiched between those two difficult games, and if he's going to pick one to go maybe a bit more defensive away for a moment, Liverpool might be the one. So this one, I think it might be a bit more open. I feel as though that would be a mistake, because how can you concentrate and play with that intensity in those areas?
Maybe perhaps he won't at Liverpool, because
either one, I think he's going to be a bit more open. And if he plays a bit more open, I don't know, I just feel as though City will just nick it, because they're a good, right, cause they're a
okay,
good side.
Okay, you traitor. Chris?
Well, I'm gonna say just City, but I think we'll beat Liverpool. So, you know, I'm not quite as bad as Gareth. But I do think City will end the bogey team status this year.
Damien?
Well, I mean, logic does suggest that City will end that hoodoo, but
I'm normally the negative one there. Come on.
I'll put my 2 shillings on a third successive 0-0.
I think it'll be 1-1. I was thinking City would share it, but I think it'll be 1-1. And I'll tell you what, Frank Lampard will definitely score. I'm telling you now.
who's going to score for us? So remember, we have
Big
to Jersey, actually
there
score.
You go. Oh, right, okay.
Well, there we go then.
I won't be putting money on it. Okay. Okay, question of the week is back. Now, Sobs was in last week to tell us about his new book, The Greatest Escape, is it, Chris?
Yep.
You know more about it than me, even though Sobs explained it all last week. And we have a copy here to give away as the prize. That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I've read it. It's a really good book, actually. It's only a fiver from the ALS shop, which is cheap for a book, really.
Christmas stocking filler.
You could call it stocking filler, but I think that's kind of like a little bit of a backhanded insult, you know what I mean? Like stocking filler. Like, it's a really good it's
great
a good
toilet
book, you know?
Book. Great. That's
you know what? It is a good toilet book.
I don't know if that's more insulting than filler.
Serious reading for the toilets, but no, it's great.
It's a fiver. It's a relatively small
book. For a fiver,
it's
great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's double the price of our fanzine, and it's like much more value for money. I'm not saying don't buy the fanzine. Okay, I'll just stop there.
Good
job. It's a great book. Great book, please buy
so
it.
So if you do buy the fanzine, stop buying that and buy the book. I think there's a message
you,
there.
Did you edit
the editor
it?
Of Love Supreme.
Yeah. Did you edit it? The book?
I proofread it.
You proofread it, did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but I'm obviously not in charge of the PR, because, you know.
Well, yeah, needless to say, move on.
Right, Gareth, do you want to take...
Yeah, so the question of the week, so the winner of this will win a book, and the question was, slightly on the theme of the book, is what was your... moment of last season, and was points for originality. So obviously, if you just say something like when we beat Newcastle 3-0, that's not going to win. Use your imagination.
Damien and Chris, you listen to these answers, because we'll be coming to you to judge the winner.
Yeah. Right, so Michael at Michael Stelling said falling two rows ahead in the mayhem when Fabio scored against the Mags, and sorry for mentioning his name, and their tears of joy when Minona saved the penalty to send us to Wembley. Neil Smile Sisyphus, I think I've said that right. I hope that's not offensive in any language. The pitch invader that changed our game in our favour against Chelsea in the cup quarter final. That's a good one. Although we don't condone pitch invasions.
The atmosphere was flat, wasn't it? And that seemed to lift
did,
everybody,
yeah.
Didn't it?
Thanks to that Raji, whoever you are. Paul Jakes at AngryPaul83, 4:30 in the morning, drinking with a couple of Cockney Man United fans after beating them to get to the cup final is only. Cockney Man United fans, isn't there?
I saw Paul that night, had a couple of beers on.
Right. Name drop. He can't win now, you've ruined that. People think it's fixed. Gary Sinclair, at Gary Sinclair 681. Paolo's press conference after Palace away accusing G of bottling a diving header. Liam Waite at Waite Journal, I don't know if he is a journalist. Tarek O's knee sliding into the Old Trafford corner flag, giving it the big one after Bardsley's semi final goal. Majestic. Algie Henderson at Algie Hendo said getting my Sunderland mug out of hiding, hid it in disgust after West Brom but started using it again once Gus was in. Neil at the White Cafu said speaking to Wearside pub club legend Dave the Rave with full time versus Palace, told me lads would stop up, and we did. The prophet Dave the Rave.
Dave the Rave.
Tommy Boyd at Tommy Boyd 97, the Gingy Traitor. Gingy, maybe that's what, I think he's Scottish, so maybe they call him a gingy in Scotland. So the Gingy Traitor scoring against Cardiff in the last minute. Big Mo Diakite and Roberge in and around the penalty area. Michael Briggs at MF Briggs, when Giaccarini scored in the League Cup after Di Canio was sacked, all the team came together and celebrated and the cup run began. Stephen Newell at Stephen Juan 10, the contrast to Mourinho's expression from 1-0 to 2-1 down. Dave Majorum, he did this over 3 tweets. If you're going to do it over 3 tweets, I might disqualify things in future, just to let you know. Send an email if you want, like somebody else has, at Mac and Marge, that is, and walking out of the hospital ward at Sunderland Royal a few hours after my little girl was born, and after I found out we won at Old Trafford, I was high as a kite. Then a lad came out from the next room with a Man United top on. My smile was as wide as the way. At Tom Wilcock 8, the result was crap, but Cat and Wall's goal versus Spurs was surreal.
I'm ruling that out because the result was crap.
Yeah, and this was from Michael.
Set it yourself.
This was from Michael Paul. He sent an email. He said, probably the best and worst season of a living memory, including the miraculous escape, Old Trafford semi-final, giant killing, and the two derby wins after being written off as relegated 6 games into the season. The highlight for me was the Wembley weekend, not just the match which saw the team and notably Cats lauded, but mainly for the credit it brought our fans from drinking Covent Garden dry, emptying Tesco's sweet shells, being told by Ricky Hatton that we're a proper football club, and singing our hearts out in the capital all weekend. We really put the word out about Sunderland, so much so that the lads I work with in London who know nothing about football knew all about us by Monday. Not even phase 3 could spoil that weekend. So that was a long answer.
Bit of a tearjerker, that one on the end.
So there are the answers. Do you have a preference?
I liked the baby one and the last one, to be honest. I thought they were the two that kept my attention.
Yeah, I think Marjoram's probably wins it for me. Like,
I'm happy. Yeah.
Well, David, after listening to the podcast for about 2 years, you've finally won Question of the Week. No doubt you'll be dancing on your dishwasher tonight. So yeah, well done. You've won a copy of The Greatest Escape. And if you haven't won, well, head over to the LS shop.
The person who mentioned Dave the Rave needs commending just for
it
that.
It was a good effort. I enjoyed that.
You can have a free badge from the LS shop for mentioning Dave.
You would post it out to him. You can sort that out.
I'm not posting it. He can come in like on the
Alright, so if you, Neil, if you're listening, just go in and ask for Chris Thompson and you can have a free badge, which is probably worth about 50 pence.
It is, yeah.
So well done.
Well done.
On the subject, actually, of the gentleman who sent the email, Michael Paul, it was, you can send us an emails if you want stuff mentioned on the pod, or if you've got any correspondence or stories or anything like that you want to send in. It's contact@wisemensay.co.uk. So if you ever fancy doing that, we'd be more than welcome to hear from you. We've had a few American listeners actually email us in the past, which is strange.
But welcomed.
Yes, absolutely. No, I didn't mean that in a negative way. Good save. Obviously, I'm not doing the PR for why. Yeah, yeah. Other things that are happening. Firstly, the FSF Awards tonight. By the time you listen to this, A Love Supreme might have won something. Who knows?
Martin's down there, so.
He is, right, in and around.
We got knocked out in the qualification rounds for the podcast. Yeah.
Well, I voted for you.
Like, they need to reassess how to do these things, in my opinion. Too, yeah. But anyway, I'm not bitter. So yeah, that might be happening. Also, Chris Waters, the support liaison at Sunderland, who does a terrific job, is also nominated for SLO of the year. So congratulations to him, and hopefully he'll come away with that as well. A double victory for Sunderland would be nice. But on the subject of the FSF, currently, I'm sure you're aware, people who listen, about the Derby to be Proud Of initiative, which was launched last year on the back of the failed bubble trip, after supporters came together from both sides and stopped that from happening. And as a continuation of that this year, and I think a few of the Newcastle fans on their sides at True Faith and stuff, some of their fans, you want to show a bit of appreciation to some of the Sunderland fans as well for the strength they showed in adversity with the MH17 situation. So there's an event taking place on the 9th of December at the Bridge Hotel in Newcastle. It's a Derby to Proud Of event by the FSF, and it's sports coming together just to have a night there, just to, you know, reinforce the fact that all footballers are, all football fans aren't idiots, you know. we can sit in the same room and have a few drinks and enjoy the same things, and
nobody's trying to make this Derby a nice friendly one. A lot of people are sort of misinterpreting and thinking we're trying to make it like Liverpool Everton, and that's not true.
That's not true at all. It's just basically, you know, we don't want a bubble trip situation to occur again. We don't want to have to be taking time off work and people giving up their time and effort to try and change that. And
nobody's asking you to go drinking with Newcastle fans on the day of the game.
No, it's not. There's not going to be an avenue of applause, as was mooted and seems to have circulated the internet. Somebody's taking a photo of something at an event that they shouldn't have really put out there, and this is like spread like wildfire, and now apparently this is what is happening. That is not happening. Basically, the event is just to reinforce the fact that, you know, Monday to Friday, we all go to work, we all do this, you know, we work together, some of the Newcastle fans, whatever, just get on with it. And on the day of the Derby, it is a bit spicier, and the week before and the week after, depending if you've won or lost, nobody wants to lose that, but this is all about, you know, celebrating the fact that football supporters are normal. So if you'd like to come to that event, I think the comedian Gavin Webster might be doing a turn, and I think Total Sport, the BBC programme, might even go out from there beforehand. There are limited spaces available for Sunderland supporters if they want to come through. So you could email us, contact@wisemensay.co.uk, or you can go on the FSF website where the information about the event is on there, and there's an email address if you'd wish to attend. And I'm sure it'll be, you know, I'm involved with the FSF, and there's, you know, a few of us going down, and it'll be, you know, just a load of good lads. It'll be good crack. So if you fancy it, get yourself along. Speaking of good crack and good lads,
Unlimited tickets.
The Wise Men Say Live podcast is taking place a week today, and you should go. If you haven't got a ticket already, go onto the LS website and buy one, and go to our website, wisemensay.co.uk. It's on there if you want to buy tickets.
Get yourself there next Monday.
They always go down really well. The panel, it's Gary Bennett. We'll be making his Wise Men Say debut. who else? James Hunter and Martin McFadden. Potential, possible editor-in-chief FSF fanzine of the year award winner.
They are a bit different as well. They aren't just like the normal podcast, in case you haven't listened before. We go on the first half, will be like that. We will be talking about, it will be after the Liverpool game, won't it? So we will be talking about the Liverpool game. But then we'll have a summary of the season so far, because we're not far from the halfway mark. Just discuss how things are going generally, new signings and things like that. And also we will have a Q&A for the last section, where you will be able to write your questions down, put it to the panel, so you will be able to ask Gary Bennett about sort of incidents from his son playing career and stuff. So you are getting a little bit more than just a normal podcast. Yeah. Like, we wouldn't expect you to come here and watch us record this as a studio and charge you £4 for it. You are getting a little bit more than that.
It's a bargain of £4 as well.
And plus you can have a drink after
banter.
Yeah, it's in the at very least it's in the Dun Cow, and that's just been done out. So
where it is. Yeah, it's at the Dun Cow, 7 o'clock doors. So I don't know what time we kick off. Probably a 7:45 or something like that. So get yourself along. They say they always go down really well. I think sometimes people turn up not knowing what to expect. But yeah, it's just a good night talking about football.
I've just caught one of those answers that just caught my eye, actually, which I think I prefer, but it's too late now.
It's too late.
I'm not going to do that to you, David.
Imagine that took it off. Like a penalty rescinded. Scott Stevens off to speak to the linesman.
When Giaccarini scored the League Cup against Birmingham, against Peterborough. That was a defining, that was an iconic moment when all the players celebrate like that. Never Bally mind, well. Too late. Sorry, who was that? Who said that?
Who was it?
It was Michael Briggs. Sorry, Michael. Briggs. If I was paying more attention, I might have fall your corner a little bit.
Yeah, Liam Waite, the Tarragonese side in the Old Trafford corner flad. Unlucky. You haven't won. Like, who else hasn't won? Yeah. We go through with everyone, just disappoint them.
Okay, well, Gareth and I will be back on Thursday with Michael Proctor for the Sun FM Into the Light Show. But this has been the Wise Men Say podcast in association with Love Supreme. Don't forget to go and buy your live pod ticket. There's only a few left. Go and do it. Thanks for listening. Over and out.